For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The tying run now 90 feet away. So Andrew Benintendi at the plate with Braden Shumake on deck. Six runs driven in tonight by Andrew Benintendi. A three-run homer in the fourth, an RBI single in the fifth, and a two-run game-winning homer here in the tenth.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
The best moments of this young and mostly brutal White Sox season is right now. They've won two in a row. Beautiful night last night. 28,000 people at the ballpark. Andrew Benintendi, an explosive offensive night. It's Tommy Pham's world right now. And John Triffin and Steve Stone had a good time with that one last night. Steve Stone joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Stoney. How are you?
Good, Speaks. How are you? And, who knew winning could be this much fun?
They should try it more often, I think. You know? I mean,
I think the bats are coming alive a bit, and maybe with the increased temperatures will come increased offense. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
I want to talk about that call and the moment and everything, but first I mentioned Tommy Pham. Like, this weird year of free agency, Brandon Belt is one guy that I'm looking around going, he still doesn't have a job? What the hell's going on here? And Tommy Pham was another. He was really good for the Diamondbacks all the way through the playoffs yesterday. What are you seeing so far, Steve? And can, like, a veteran like that kind of wake up other people, like maybe the outfielder to his right, frankly?
Well, look, let's hope that that's the case, but I don't really know. I do know that he's had two hits in each game he's played, so that's good looking from a production standpoint. And whatever he brings to the locker room and in that dugout is a good thing. He's a guy who's been around. He hit over 300 last year in the playoffs. I mean, so he's used to the big moments, and the Sox could use an infusion of offense. And if Tommy Pham is the guy, well, then that's a good thing. But right now, one thing we have to realize, Speaks, and I think this is important for the fans, and it's not an excuse by any stretch of the imagination, because this is reality. It took the Sox a great deal of time to get where they currently are. By my estimation, maybe 8 to 10 years, something along that lines, to get to a situation where the minor leagues isn't near as productive as they would like, although it's getting better. In the major leagues, long-term deals have not worked out as well as they would like. So taking about 8 to 10 years to get to this point, I think everybody has to realize that it's going to take a little bit more time than they would like to get out of this spot, because you have to build a foundation. You have to get a more productive minor leagues, and the current administration is certainly addressing that. So right now we're seeing a couple of days where the offense was good, and it makes all the difference in the world, because you're not going to win too many major league games 2-1. Or 3-2. It doesn't work out that way. So hitting the ball out of the ballpark, scoring some runs, makes everything else a little less important, because when you're not scoring, every misplay, every mistake will ostensibly beat you in that game. And that's what was happening to the Sox. But you know, the last couple of days, you saw what happened. If this team can score, it can overcome a lot of things.
You know, it's interesting stuff, Stoney, because there's the micro of the days that we're living in this particular moment at the MLB level, and then the macro of the big picture that you talked about. And that is, I mean, 8 to 10 years to deliver you here, that's in the back of the minds of so many fans, and that's why there's like a difficulty to have the appetite for the length of time that it can take, is because they were asked to do that 8 or 10 years ago, and it didn't end up working out, or 7 years ago, whatever it's been. So it's a difficult ask. You know, when John says, for all the haters last night, in the midst, again, of what I thought was a really fun, good, high energy call, the haters thing has gotten some interesting response, and to me it felt like, I don't know, is he talking about national haters who've been all over the White Sox, or is he talking about local haters? Because some of the local haters are White Sox fans, you know what I mean? So to the best of your knowledge, who are the haters?
I have no idea what he meant. I do know that people have gotten frustrated. The fans obviously are frustrated. That's to be expected. I mean, they are White Sox fans and have been for a long time, for the most part. They want to see this team do very well, and the team was off to a horrific start. So people get antagonistic, and I don't know what he meant because I didn't talk with him about it, but, you know, he's his own guy. He can do what he wants and say what he wants. As far as interpreting it, I guess that's up to everybody.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and hopefully, you know, I'll get a chance to ask him, or we'll get a chance here at the station to ask him, because it's what a manager does, right? It's what a ball club does sometimes, pushing against anybody and everybody. And so maybe that's what a broadcast booth does too. Stoney, have you had that experience in your career and in your life where you're like, man, people freaking hate us and think we suck, and sometimes they're right, but screw them. Like, does a broadcast booth push against haters sometimes?
I would say very rarely, because we're a couple of professionals doing that. You know, look, all you have to do is look at social media and look at some of the things that have been said nationally and locally. And look, the team has not played well. So when you don't play well, and if everybody is being held accountable, that means the front office, the locker room, the dugout, the coaching staff, and everybody else is contributing to get to this point. Now, they thought the team would be a bit better in spring training, and I did also. But in a week, you lose three of your major offensive forces and one of your pitchers, and quite obviously that's not going to help the offense very much. So, I mean, hopefully this team can turn it around, because whether they can get there or not this year, you still have to use each and every game as a building block to the next game and to the next year, and try to develop your minor league system on the fly, which is something they're doing. They traded away a lot of major league assets to replenish their minor leagues, and the minor league looks a bit better than it did. But again, it doesn't happen overnight.
So we're talking to Steve Stone here on 670 The Score and talking some White Sox. The minor league does look a little better. Birmingham is playing really well right now. And my goodness, Drew Thorpe, who's the jewel of the Dylan Cease trade, continues to pitch really, really well. And I wonder if, at some point, if Drew Thorpe gets a look. I mean, your thoughts on double A to the big leagues for young pitchers these days. A lot of organizations are kind of skipping triple A and just using these bullets as soon as possible.
Well, historically, double A was the place where you put your top-of-the-line prospects, and triple A was a place where you have many of your insurance policies against injuries in the major leagues. More times than not, that real good prospect will skip most of triple A, sometimes all of it, before he comes to the major leagues, but sometimes it doesn't work, and you have to look at Jackson Holliday to see the number one prospect in baseball come to the major leagues and just get overwhelmed. I mean, it's very difficult to produce in the major leagues. These are the best players in the world. And whether you think your team can play or can't play, the fact is that these are the best players in the world, and sometimes they play better, sometimes they play worse. But you have to wait for all of this to develop as a team. They have to start to learn how to win as a team. And last night, they showed that they can come back in games. come back and eventually get a win, which is important to a team's psyche to understand that they're never going to be out of a game. And if the offense continues to produce, that will be the case. Because, as you know, guaranteed rate is a home run ballpark. And last year, this team was out-homered at home, which meant that it wasn't going to be a real good season because you got the 81 days there. And if you're out-homered in a home run park, you're going to have some problems. So hitting the ball out of the ballpark was one of the keys that the Sox was looking for in the spring, and maybe now they're in the process of doing it because, as we can see, three-run homers help you get back in the game and help you put away a game.
Yeah, your guy Earl Weaver, big fan of the three-run homer.
Very much so, yes. He would rather give up a child than an out.
Steve Stone, what do you make of Michael Kopech's season so far? Two innings on Friday night, 26 pitches. One inning last night, 14 pitches. Mostly one inning stints, but how has the stuff looked as he tries to bounce back night to night as a regular reliever?
Well, I think he's accepted the role, and that's the first step to excel in a role is acceptance. And, look, was he disappointed in spring training when they told him he was going to go to the bullpen? Probably. But, you know, that's a pretty high-profile job when you're getting the ball at the end and your team is looking to you to nail it down. So I think he's learning. I do believe that he's going to figure it out. He's got to get better command of that fastball because everything will work off that. But it's lively enough, and we've seen it, you know, up to 102. It's lively enough to get by a whole lot of folks. He just has to make sure when he's throwing at 97 to 99, he doesn't leave it out over the middle of the plate because that's a danger zone. But there is a learning curve to a guy who comes in at the back end. And Michael is starting to learn that. He's got a great arm. We all know that. Now it's a question of understanding his role. understanding his role and what to use when he comes in, how to throw strikes, how to get ahead, how to use that wipeout slider when he does get ahead. And this is all a learning curve, and he's learning it.
You know, it's so interesting. I feel like there's an inflection point often with these young pitchers. I'm looking at a guy like Ben Brown on the north side who got rocked a little bit as a starter last night but has been good. And he is a guy, and you've heard this a million times in your life, Steve, where if they just let him be a reliever and let it fly, could probably hit 98, 99 with regularity as a starter. He'd use a little bit more of a mix, although he's like a two-pitch guy these days. But he'd dial it down a little bit. And so I feel like I've been here so many times throughout a life of watching baseball and trying to figure out whether a young fireballer is best suited in the bullpen or best suited as a starter. Do you have any broad strokes of things that you believe about certain pitchers that indicate whether they're made for the bullpen or made for the rotation?
Well, one of the things that's evident is that if you're going to be in the rotation, you probably should have three pitches. And that's one of the things that Michael has struggled with is the third pitch, which means he'd probably be more effective out of the pen because you can go with two pitches. You can go with that big fastball and hard slider and you can get by because you're not going to face a guy two or three times. You're only going to face him once. And that's a big difference, but it's understanding the role that makes you what you become. And we don't know what that's going to be. I do look for a guy as a starting pitcher who can get that third pitch over the plate on occasion because although there's been some great two-pitch pitchers in the history of the game, the only ones that excelled are the really, truly great ones. Bob Gibson was a two-pitch pitcher. Sandy Koufax was a two-pitch pitcher. But these are Hall of Famers. These are great pitchers. These are guys with overwhelming stuff. They can get away with two pitches because they're both outstanding. But the average pitcher can't do that, and that will separate your pensman from a guy who you can consider in the starting rotation.
Five relievers needed in yesterday's win over the Rays. So a call-up, Prelander Baroa is here, a hard-throwing righty that the White Sox got from Seattle in the Gregory Santos trade. He'll make his White Sox debut when and if he gets into a game this weekend. Have you seen him at all? Know anything about Prelander Baroa, sir?
I have not seen him. Don't know much, except that's an interesting first name.
Yeah, Prelander. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Just switch that E and the R, swap the P for a V, and then we're really getting somewhere.
Yeah, he's pretty good. That old guy is pretty good, you're mentioning.
Yeah, he is awfully good, isn't he? Like, I feel like he's one of the last ones left who kind of holds something in the tank for the third time through or the fourth time through. Doesn't seem any starter thinks like that anymore, Steve.
No, it says go as hard as you can, as long as you can. It's usually five plus innings, whatever the case may be, and then you depart the game, and the bullpen has to pick up. Well, they have to pick up four innings or four, you know, three and a third, three and two thirds, whatever the case may be. But the Sox are in a position now where the bullpen is getting a little worn out, so we could use a starter going a little deeper into the game.
Mm-hmm. Steve, have you watched Kyle Hendricks at all this year and seen him? Because I think he's just such a fascinating guy to think about pitching with. Two fastballs, two changeups, but there's just not a lot of discrepancy between the speed of the changeups and the fastballs. So it's kind of a miracle how successful he's been through the years, and people are wondering whether he's done or not.
Well, a good straight change will take you a long way. I mean, you witnessed, as I did, Jamie Moyer pitch all those years and throw the ball 83, 84 miles an hour. But he had a great straight change, and I think that's essential for a lot of these guys that will keep them around. So as far as Hendricks is concerned, look, I think he's a guy over the course of his career that got as close to 100% of his ability out. The most frustrating thing for me, Spiegs, is squandered talent. Mm-hmm. Ability that you don't get out. Guys who are performing to 60% of what they can do. In the case of Kyle Hendricks, I think he performed as close to 100% of what he had from the beginning, and he made a wonderful career for himself because of his ability to move the ball in and out, up and down, throw a couple of different changeups. But Father Time, as we know, is undefeated and untied, and eventually, because it's a game of attrition, Father Time will take a whole lot of it away from you, and maybe that's what Kyle is going through now. He's a wonderful guy. I remember talking to him for a couple of hours in the locker room during a spring training game, and we talked as he was coming back from his injury. He understands how to pitch. I think he would make a magnificent pitching coach down the road. But when I look at him, I think that if more players had his work ethic, his ability to intellectualize this pursuit on a daily basis, they would be better off for it. But he's an example of a guy that went out there with less than overwhelming talent and squeezed the absolute most out of his ability, and I will always respect him for that.
That's good stuff. Last thing, Steve, what do you think about these Tampa Rays? The Sox take them for two in a row. They're two games under 500. They got a run differential of minus 30. Maybe this is not, maybe is this a down year for Tampa overall?
Well, it looks to be like a team, if you don't have a high budget, and as we know, Tampa really never does, you can't afford huge catastrophic injuries, and that's one of the things that has happened to them. They've had a whole lot of guys low and low that are not in the lineup. They have a whole lot of guys who can't be there for a number of different reasons. I mean, the loss of Wander Franco was a big loss because he was a terrific player. So they've gone through their injuries, and when you have a low payroll and you do get injuries to substantial members of your team, you're probably not going to pick it up and perform all that well.
Steve Stone, good stuff. Enjoy yourself today and beyond, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Speaks. Have a good show.
You got it. That's Steve Stone right there. And in about 20 minutes, we'll do a check-in on the last Comiskey documentary, because there's a book coming out that intrigues me. But I've got a few minutes open for you here. If there are Sox fans out there who'd like to comment on the haters thing, I'd love to know what you think. Thought that was interesting. And Steve didn't want to speak for John Triffin, and that's cool. But, you know, how does that sound? How does that feel when your broadcaster is saying that? Was it a good moment that makes you feel like you're rallying around a lot of negativity that's out there? Or did you feel targeted? I'm curious. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. You can dial it up and get involved, and you can certainly text it that way as well.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Off and it tied up the game at three at the time. Benintendi got underneath this one to center field. There goes Arena. Look at the wind take it! The White Sox catch a break, and Gavin Sheets scores!
Gavin Sheets' RBI single right there. Highlight courtesy NBC Sports Chicago. Matt Spiegel here with you. Top of the hour, we get back to Cubs. Cubs and Red Sox talk with our guy, Ryan Dempster. We'll talk about this series, and we'll talk about other stuff with Demp. I love talking to Demp. So that'll be top of the hour. But I've got a little time here and wanted to do a couple of things. One is investigate the leaderboards, as I do at least once every Sunday morning, as a harken back to the childhood where you only really got to see the leaders in MLB in the newspaper. I was the kid sitting there, you know, looking up like, oh my God, there they are. All the hitters and all the pitchers in all their glory. Because I don't get to see it during the week. And there is no such thing as the internet, which perhaps someday there will be. But right now there is. Right now, folks, there are seven hitters with an OPS over one in MLB. Mookie Betts is looking like the best player in baseball, and he's been dancing around that title for several years. He's looking like he might be that guy right now. By the way, there are two people just under 1,000 in OPS that are very interesting new five-tool heroes that we'll have to get to here as we look at it. But Marcell Ozuna with a huge start for Atlanta. Shohei Ohtani has picked up right where he left off. Alec Bohm of the Phillies is having an incredible start to the season. Juan Soto making Yankee fans want him long-term and really helping that Yankee offense survive bumpy stuff from Aaron Judge. Salvador Perez has an OPS over one, ageless at the plate, the catcher for the Royals. And the last guy with an OPS over one was my American League MVP pick, Gunnar Henderson of the Baltimore Orioles. Shortstop, having himself a great year offensively. And then there's two dudes who have now added power. One is C.J. Abrams, longtime Padres prospect, went over for Soto to Washington, and he has added power and is a superstar on the come for the Washington Nationals. And the other is maybe the most exciting man in baseball, Elly De La Cruz, with 17 walks now to go along with 17 stolen bases. And oh, by the way, seven homers and 987 OPS. And then just here's one other thing on the hitters, by the way. I don't know when the last time this happened, but there are four catchers in the top 16 hitters in MLB. Salvi Perez, sixth. Both Contreras brothers at 10 and 12. William and Wilson with OPSs above 950. And then Will Smith, who signed that big Dodgers deal, is your third Dodger in the top 16 in OPS and MLB with Shohei and Mookie all the way up at the very top. Looking at the pitchers and looking at ERA, right now there are 13 pitchers with an ERA under two. We'll start from the highest, Zach Wheeler at 1.93. Your defending Cy Young winner, right? Zach Wheeler, and who's been great again. He's one of many pitchers to take the White Sox hitless into the eighth inning. Logan Gilbert of the Mariners. Tarik Skubal, one of many young Tigers pitchers. Tyler Anderson, Seth Lugo in Kansas City. Wow, Tanner Houck. Ranel Blanco of the Astros, who threw a no-hitter in the first week and continued to be good. And some interesting names above them. Jordan Hicks of the Giants, the converted former closer of the St. Louis Cardinals, is having a great year as a starter for the Giants. Cutter Crawford is up there. Ranger Suarez of the Phillies is making a great run. Jose Berrios is having the best start of his career for Toronto. Shota Imanaga is second in MLB among qualified pitchers in earned run average at a 0.98. And the best pitcher in baseball in terms of ERA, Reynaldo Lopez, the former White Sox pitcher, traded to Anaheim along with Lucas Giolito, and is now holding down the rotation for the Atlanta Braves. A dominant, dominant start for Reynaldo Lopez. Interesting, at least to me. All right, wanted to ask you about John Schifrin's comment on the haters. Do we have that short, by the way? Was that cut up short?
I don't like our team.
Yeah. Oh, there's Chris Getz. He doesn't like the team. So do other people not like the team? Yeah. A lot of White Sox fans don't like the team. Is there an obvious shirt that says, I don't like our team? There ought to be. If not, because I think a lot of White Sox fans would buy it. I mean, White Sox fans have been part of the haters. That is for damn sure. But when John Schifrin mentions the haters, as he did in the midst of that call last night, is he talking about the locals who have been all over their own team? Or is he talking about Nationals? I saw that John Boy Media said, you know, we can declare one team dead. Yeah, the White Sox are dead. They declared the White Sox dead. It's pretty early to do so, but I get it. But how did you feel about hearing that? Texters, the hater comment was interesting last night. Says a texter, the hater comment is interesting from a guy that's been here a month. He ought to watch who he's talking about. I'd love you to ask him about it. I know that you will. Here's another. Didn't hear it, but then heard the highlight. If it was directed at any fans, it's weak, just like the Southside stand-up. I don't know. I kind of like Southside stand-up. I'm all right with that. And again, if you missed me talking about it, I really enjoyed the call last night. Thought it was a high-energy, fun call of a walk-off. But then the haters thing was kind of infantile, it seemed, if it's directed at your own fans. You know, more textures. I'm already having a tough time getting my arms around the guy because he's not Benetti, unfair as that may be. But if he's going to add being a crybaby about people criticizing a horrible team to his repertoire, it's going to be impossible to win me over. That's from Scott from Park Ridge. Another one. I think Schifrin's mention of the haters sounded petty and a little bit out of touch since they have the fewest amount of wins in the league. It also sounded like maybe he's broadcasting specifically for Jerry, which you know perhaps he is. Jerry being the leader of the little brother, everyone is against us, nobody knows as much as we do crowd. Whew. So there's some textures with some strong thoughts. There are a lot of positive thoughts on Twitter in regards to the call and enjoying the call. And again, the call overall I thought was really good, but the haters thing is interesting. By the way, I'm told that not only does that obvious shirt exist, that obvious shirt of I don't like our team, but that obvious, our guy Joe Obvious over there, is donating a portion of proceeds from that shirt to White Sox content creators, which is quite something. And that's pretty cool. You know, it's interesting. I was texting with a big league broadcaster about it, about the haters comment. And he said, look, you don't get to be a hater if it is about the team. You don't get to be a hater and then also be upset. Be upset if you're insulted. If you get insulted by the broadcasters. If you are a hater, then you don't get to be insulted when there's pushback going on. But it's a really unique dynamic for the White Sox fans that may be among the haters. They have a right to hate what the White Sox have done to them. They have earned that right. If there's anybody out there who bought in hardcore to the rebuild and was ready and then was disappointed and let down by the La Russa hire and the Benintendi signing and the Grandal signing and the Keuchel signing and then the lack of trades to try and chase down the window and then the decay and the lengthy decay of La Russa's tenure as well. I mean, if you were somebody who did buy tickets and are let down, you have a right to be a hater. And I would say to John Schifrin, if the locals are in his mind, to tread lightly because they're entitled to their hate. They're entitled to it. But maybe he just meant the Nationals. Maybe he meant, you know, just people around the game who are going after the White Sox. So we'll see. be a good excuse to try and talk to him and figure out what that was exactly all about. Your phone calls, your texts, welcome at 312-644-6767. Texter says, honestly, I don't think there are many of us left who are not haters. There are not many that are left. Let's go to Gene in Dallas, who is on 670 The Score. Gene, thanks for calling Hit and Run. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. I'm good. You just was really driving it in. I felt like you were just stabbing me. LaRusso, Benintendi, Gradal. Ouch, ouch, ouch. So yeah. The reason I called was because all hate is warranted right now. And I am a diehard White Sox fan. I attended my first game, and it was that L guy name that you said, leaving the pitcher in the 10th inning at Old Comiskey, and a Tito Landrum home run sinks us. So I go way back with this thing, you know, and all hate, like I said, is warranted. And I'm so pissed off at ownership. I'm pissed off because we just sat here and did nothing. And this is what really pisses me off that nobody has hit on. This really pisses me off. MLB changes the rule on drafting. So last year we had a top five pick, whatever. Now we can't draft until number 10. So we're going to have a worse record in a middle of the age of minor league system, and we can't pick the 10th. And Jerry goes out and put a subpar product on the field. Don't even try to get middle to upper tier players to even try and trade them to get us some prospects for a little hope. This is ridiculous, and I'm so pissed at ownership that I will never ever turn my back on my Chicago team, but I cannot stomach this team this year.
Thank you, Gene. Appreciate it. It's understandable where you are, and then you still want to sit there and watch your team and enjoy your team. Texters, if Jerry doesn't hate what has happened the last few years, tells you all you need to know about what he cares about. Here's another. Are we sure he isn't responding to people who hate the South Side stand-up call? And there's another texter assuming that. You know, are you sure that he's not referring to that? Another texter says, ask him why he won't mention the Cubs by name. He says North Side team. Well, if he's embracing that kind of insular little brother feeling, I'm sure that's going to go over very well with a lot of people within the org and with some fans. It's an interesting thing, because I think eventually this guy is going to be very popular. I do believe that he's going to be very popular. But when the team is bad, there's almost no chance of it. I think if the team ever gets good and he's here for it and survives it, and he brings this kind of passion and homerism and inherent defense of all things White Sox, then I think this guy is going to end up being popular. Let's go to Ron on the South Side to talk some White Sox with us right now on The Score. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Steve. Well, first of all, man, that was just petty and just cheap, man. I mean, and first of all, regarding the haters, all you have to do is look. Somebody said maybe he's broadcasting for Jerry Reinsdorf. That's all you have to look at. All of this. Steve talked about the foundation. Well, he hired Dex, who was part of the Fell Foundation.
Yes.
He hired a manager that has done anything. So, no, it's not hating. I mean, when you look in there, one of the worst baseball organizations, obviously, not just team streets, you went to the minor leagues, everything. So, no, it's not hate. But now let me tell you this.
Well, hold on, Ron.
He's going to be pretty.
Ron, let me ask you something. Since you brought up the whole organization, did you see what had happened with the White Sox when they played against the Twins this past week? You saw they got their butts kicked, right? Got swept by the Twins.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know, the Twins can't hit off-speed pitches to save their life. Last year, dead last in a batting average and OPS against off-speed pitches. All around the league, pitchers themselves and teams are throwing way more breaking balls and off-speed pitches than ever before, because if guys can't hit it, then throw a lot of them. And every team in baseball is targeting the Twins with non-fastballs, with off-speed pitches. The White Sox went in there and threw like 69% fastballs in one game, 66% fastballs in the other, way, way more than any team has done to the Twins all year and last year as well. And they got their ass kicked. And it's like, where is your advanced scouting? What the hell is going on? So you're this far along after one rebuild, and now you're in the, you have begun another one, and you still don't know how to advance scout against the Twins, your division rival? What the hell is going on? So it's that kind of stuff that just makes you crazy, in my opinion.
Well, it's big, and I don't go, but it's going to be a long time. Steve said that it took 8-10 years maybe to get here. The way this organization is set up now, Speeds, it's going to be a lot of. But let me say, tell you before I go, because somebody made reference. This is the first time I've said this on the radio. I was not a Jason Benetti fan, so He didn't do anything for me. I just want to say that. So I think this guy's gonna be pretty good. But you know, don't be a kiss ass. Have a good day.
Thank you, Ron. I love Ron. He's the best. It's Hit and Run. I'm Matt Spiegel here on 670 The Score. Top of the hour, Ryan Dempster will reset us on Cubs and Red Sox, and we'll do a lot of Cubs next hour. When we come back, let's talk about an old ballpark that is gone, but finally memorialized properly. We'll do it next on Hit and Run on The Score.
Say it with me. Say it proud for all the haters. Southside, stand up. Was written. The way the Sox have played baseball for 80 years here, for the most part, have been low-scoring games, and once again, the finale, that's exactly what it was. They won it 2-1, as you see Carlton Fisk, Jeff Colborne, Bobby Thigpen, the entire Sox ball club. What a great year it has been, and what a befitting way to close the season.
What are you looking at?
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
We are in 1990 right there for a moment. Is that Madonna's Vogue? Is that what I have going on right there?
It is, yes, yeah.
Strike a pose. Strike a pose, everyone, as everyone did strike a pose in 1990, the final year of Comiskey Park. We'll talk to Ryan Dempster about the Cubs and the Red Sox at the top of the hour. But right now, I want to talk to you about the last Comiskey book, which is now available for pre-order, celebrating the magic and the final season of the Baseball Palace of the World. And it was a great, great documentary on YouTube last year. We had Nancy Faust on the show talking all about it. And right now we are welcomed by the author, the first-time author, Ken Smaller, of the book that is Last Comiskey, because now there's a companion piece. Ken, thank you so much for coming on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. That song got me a little bit weepy hearing the intro and hearing Hawk's voice there.
Yeah.
Brings me back.
Yeah, good. Well, I mean, good. And like, I mean, it's interesting because I don't think that stadium has been celebrated properly. And as a baseball lover and as a passionate enjoyer of both teams on both sides, when things are interesting, I've really enjoyed what the documentary and now presumably the book will do to remind people of just how great that place was, Ken.
Yeah, that's really was the goal in the book and in the documentary. Matt Flesh did an amazing job in the documentary, and I had contributed photos that I had taken in 1990 when I was a college photographer, just a sophomore at the time. And I had taken hundreds and hundreds of photos of the old ballpark to try to keep my memories alive. And I love sharing those photos now with White Sox fans, baseball fans, Chicagoans in general. It's just great to think back, but that ballpark had some tremendous memories, a lot of history, and really was a special ballpark that I think people today don't realize how distinctive and unique it was. And it's wonderful to think back, not just to that great 1990 season where the team nearly caught the juggernaut Oakland A's, who were heavily, heavily juiced up in those days. But it also just, you know, you think back to that ballpark and all the great memories.
Yep.
It's also fun to share it with kids and young adults who don't even have any actual memories of it themselves, having not been born at the time.
Ken, so tell us about the pictures that are in the book. I mean, we've got a really interesting team, obviously, with Frank Thomas and Robin Ventura as rookies, and, you know, a very young and raw Sammy Sosa, very thin Sammy Sosa. But and how much of just the ballpark itself is already there? Because you, for anybody who doesn't know, you're a devotee of ballparks in general. Stadium Vagabond is the website and the Twitter account of the same name for our guest.
Yeah, correct. So I started my photography life at Old Comiskey Park when I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. The team used to always have photo day at the time, or camera day, where the players would sort of trot out and go along the perimeter of the infield, and fans could come and go on the field and take photos. And I started doing that with my little Kodak 110 camera back in those days, and really got hooked on photography and bringing my camera to White Sox games, but also to Bears games and Bulls games, et cetera. And I became a college photographer at Michigan during the Fab Five and Desmond Howard era, and continued on. I've now photographed over 2,300 stadiums, ballparks, arenas throughout the world. And really my favorite one goes back to the original one. It was Comiskey Park, where I first learned to take pictures. And during the last season of the ballpark, I was spending my summers in Chicago and took about 4 or 5 days off of my summer job, brought my camera to the ballpark and captured really every nook and cranny of the park, inside, outside, the concourses, the people, you know, Andy the Clown, Nancy Faust, the shoeshine guy on the third base concourse, all those folks. And really, I wanted to make sure that I had these memories. But I kind of suspected that somewhere down the line, this could make a great book for baseball fans. And when the documentary came out and Matt Flesch was looking for contributors, I thought this is a great chance to get my photos in front of White Sox fans. And the feedback has been wonderful. It's really exciting to share these photos with folks, most of which have never been seen by anyone. And they're all old negatives that I restored to some degree, not, you know, keeping the old feel to them. But I really wanted to capture that season and the essence of the ballpark in ways that maybe a lot of fans hadn't previously seen. You know, some behind-the-scenes things such as manager Jeff Torborg's locker room office. I was able to get a press pass for one day and get in there and talk to him, and a lot of other aspects of the park that probably no one really remembers or maybe never saw. So
wow.
It's really fun to share that with fans.
One more thing, Ken. By the way, the book is Last Comiskey, and it is now available for pre-order. And where can they get it, by the way?
Comiskey. It's at,
go ahead.
LastComiskeyBook.com. It's LastComiskeyBook.com.
Okay.
And it's going to be available and coming out any day now. We're actually just getting it shipped from the printers. And even more excitingly, we're going to have a big book launch event at the Chicago History Museum on May 16th. Free to all fans who want to come and just RSVP in advance. We're going to have Ron Kittle there, Jack McDowell, Don Paul, Evergreen Park native, who lived everyone's dream and played for the White Sox.
Sure.
Every, you know, kid's dream to play for their hometown team. And, of course, Tom Scherer, the first voice ever heard on this radio station, will be our MC that night.
That's really cool. So May 16th at the Chicago History Museum. That's really cool. So, look, I don't know if there will be a new ballpark on the South Side. I liked the idea, certainly, and I don't want to get into all of that. But if there is a new ballpark, what are some things that, we just have a final minute here, what are a couple things they should take from Comiskey that maybe they missed at Guaranteed Rate, but should make sure to have in a new stadium should they get to make one?
Yeah, I think the key thing, and I think all baseball fans would agree, the upper deck's got to be a little closer to the playing field. You know, stadiums like PNC Park have an upper deck that is cantilevered over the lower deck, and it's a more intimate feel. I think all White Sox fans would love to get that back. The other thing I'd love to see are the arches. Those arches were such a significant part of Old Comiskey, allowing fans to see out to the neighborhood and the neighborhood to see into the ballpark. I'd love to see some element of that really as part of a new ballpark, but I'm all for the South Loop ballpark. I think it would be great.
Ken Smoller is our guest, Stadium Vagabond on Twitter and stadiumvagabond.com. And you will also check out the book. LastComiskeyBook.com is the site to order that for the White Sox fan in your life. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
You got it. That's Ken Smoller, the author of the book and the photographer behind the book, Last Comiskey. All right, another hour to go here on Hit and Run. I love talking baseball with Ryan Dempster, and nobody else better to talk about the Cubs and the Red Sox in a series at Fenway than Ryan Dempster, who's doing work for Marquee during this series. So we will talk to Ryan next right here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Season.
What are you looking at?
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
We are in 1990 right there for a moment. Is that Madonna's Vogue? Is that what I have going on right there?
It is, yes, yeah.
Strike a pose. Strike a pose, everyone, as everyone did strike a pose in 1990, the final year of Comiskey Park. We'll talk to Ryan Dempster about the Cubs and the Red Sox at the top of the hour. But right now, I want to talk to you about the Last Comiskey book, which is now available for pre-order, celebrating the magic and the final season of the baseball palace of the world. And it was a great documentary on YouTube last year. We had Nancy Faust on the show talking all about it. And right now we are welcomed by the author, the first time author, Ken Smoller, of the book that is Last Comiskey, because now there's a companion piece. Ken, thank you so much for coming on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. That song got me a little bit weepy hearing the intro and hearing Hawk's voice there.
Yeah.
Brings me back.
Yeah, good. Well, I mean, good. And like, I mean, it's interesting because I don't think that stadium has been celebrated properly. And as a baseball lover and as a passionate enjoyer of both teams on both sides, when things are interesting, I've really enjoyed what the documentary and now presumably the book will do to remind people of just how great that place was, Ken.
Yeah, that's really was the goal in the book and in the documentary. Matt Flesh did an amazing job in the documentary, and I had contributed photos that I had taken in 1990 when I was a college photographer, just a sophomore at the time, and I had taken hundreds and hundreds of photos of the old ballpark to try to keep my memories alive. And I love sharing those photos now with White Sox fans, baseball fans, Chicagoans. In general, it's just great to think back, but that ballpark has some tremendous memories, a lot of history, and really was a special ballpark that I think people today don't realize how distinctive and unique it was. And it's wonderful to think back, not just to that great 1990 season where the team nearly caught the juggernaut Oakland A's, who were heavily, heavily juiced up in those days. But it also just, you know, you think back to that ballpark and all the great memories.
Yep.
It's also fun to share it with kids and young adults who don't even have any actual memories of it themselves, having not been born at the time.
Ken, so tell us about the pictures that are in the book. I mean, we've got a really interesting team, obviously, with Frank Thomas and Robin Ventura as rookies, and, you know, a very young and raw Sammy Sosa, very thin Sammy Sosa. But how much of just the ballpark itself is already there? Because you, for anybody who doesn't know, you're a devotee of ballparks in general. Stadium Vagabond is the website and the Twitter account of the same name for our guest.
Yeah, correct. So I started my photography life at Old Comiskey Park when I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. The team used to always have photo day at the time, or camera day, where the players would sort of trot out and go along the perimeter of the infield, and fans could come and go on the field and take photos. And I started doing that with my little Kodak 110 camera back in those days, and really got hooked on photography and bringing my camera to White Sox games, but also to Bears games and Bulls games, et cetera. And I became a college photographer at Michigan during the Fab Five and Desmond Howard era, and continued on. I've now photographed over 2,300 stadiums, ballparks, arenas throughout the world. And really my favorite one goes back to the original one. It was Comiskey Park, where I first learned to take pictures. And during the last season of the ballpark, I was spending my summers in Chicago and took about 4 or 5 days off of my summer job, brought my camera to the ballpark, and captured really every nook and cranny of the park, inside, outside, the concourses, the people, you know, Andy the Clown, Nancy Faust, the shoeshine guy on the third base concourse, all those folks. And really, I wanted to make sure that I had these memories. But I kind of suspected that somewhere down the line, this could make a great book for baseball fans. And when the documentary came out and Matt Flesch was looking for contributors, I thought this is a great chance to get my photos in front of White Sox fans. And the feedback has been wonderful. It's really exciting to share these photos with folks, most of which have never been seen by anyone. And they're all old negatives that I restored to some degree, not, you know, keeping the old feel to them. But I really wanted to capture that season and the essence of the ballpark in ways that maybe a lot of fans hadn't previously seen. You know, some behind-the-scenes things such as manager Jeff Torborg's locker room office. I was able to get a press pass for one day and get in there and talk to him, and a lot of other aspects of the park that probably no one really remembers or maybe never saw. So
wow.
It's really fun to share that with fans.
One more thing, Ken. By the way, the book is Last Comiskey, and it is now available for pre-order. And where can they get it, by the way?
It's at
go ahead.
LastComiskeyBook.com. It's LastComiskeyBook.com.
Okay.
And it's going to be available and coming out any day now. We're actually just getting it shipped from the printers. And even more excitingly, we're going to have a big book launch event at the Chicago History Museum on May 16th. Free to all fans who want to come and just RSVP in advance. We're going to have Ron Kittle there, Jack McDowell, Don Paul, Evergreen Park native who lived everyone's dream and played for the White Sox.
Sure.
Every, you know, kid's dream to play for their hometown team. And, of course, Tom Scherer, the first voice ever heard on this radio station, will be our MC that night.
That's really cool. So May 16th at the Chicago History Museum. That's really cool. So look, I don't know if there will be a new ballpark on the South Side. I liked the idea, certainly, and I don't want to get into all of that. But if there is a new ballpark, what are some things that we just have a final minute here? What are a couple things they should take from Comiskey that maybe they missed at Guaranteed Rate, but should make sure to have in a new stadium should they get to make one?
Yeah, I think the key thing, and I think all baseball fans would agree, the upper deck's got to be a little closer to the playing field. You know, stadiums like PNC Park have an upper deck that is cantilevered over the lower deck, and it's a more intimate feel. I think all White Sox fans would love to get that back. The other thing I'd love to see are the arches. Those arches were such a significant part of Old Comiskey, allowing fans to see out to the neighborhood and the neighborhood to see into the ballpark. I'd love to see some element of that really as part of a new ballpark, but I'm all for the South Loop ballpark. I think it would be great.
Ken Smoller is our guest, Stadium Vagabond on Twitter and stadiumvagabond.com. And you will also check out the book. LastComiskeyBook.com is the site to order that for the White Sox fan in your life. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
You got it. That's Ken Smoller, the author of the book and the photographer behind the book, Last Comiskey. All right, another hour to go here on Hit and Run. I love talking baseball with Ryan Dempster, and nobody else better to talk about the Cubs and the Red Sox in a series at Fenway than Ryan Dempster, who's doing work for Marquee during this series. So we will talk to Ryan next right here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.